Ladies and gentlemen, guess what's Mean Green Nation podcast coming to you on a Sunday morning, a little sadder than we were last week when Greg was out there on his patio enjoying life. Felt good about life. Now I think I jokingly called him Grumpy Greg. So Greg Godecker joins me on the Mean Green Nation podcast as usual. I am your host Adam, and we're going to talk about last night's game. According to Florida fans, this is the most classless, cheap, dirty podcast in this world. So, you know, enjoy. Jim McElwain may feel the same way. He might even come out and half the field and yell at me for it. I felt all the different feelings everybody felt about these kinds of games, these body bag games. Why do we play them? It's a terrible, you know, terrible situation. Seeing our team getting destroyed on national TV. And all the way to, you know, this is an opportunity game. We have a chance to do something. You know, we're on a stage and people are going to see what we can do. And it really depends on the state of your program, how you feel about it. Like North Dakota State, for 5-6 years, they've enjoyed every one of these quote-unquote body bag games because they went into the big-time stadium and they got a W and they took the check. Last night, all we did was take the check. You know, when the program gets better, hopefully, if it gets better, quote, you know, we'll be in a better position with these games. I feel like if we played something like a Mississippi State, you know, Vanderbilt, we would have had a better situation, maybe some better feelings about this. But the number 23 rank Florida Gators shutting us down with one of the best defenses in the nation, I don't think we could expect too much. Our defense played well. They made some people proud. But in the end, when you look at the numbers, you know, we got beat by 32 points and didn't score at all. So you can't be too excited about things. You can't go around high-fiving. Maybe a low five. A soft low five on the low. Mr. Greg Godecker, how did you feel about last night's game?
First off, quit using my last name because some Florida fan's going to look me up, you know, and start sending me hate mail because I would say that Joshua Wheeler's hit wasn't intentional. you know, they were very feisty on Twitter last night.
Greg, you're a classless human being. I'm sorry. Because of that one play that was unintentional, we are all the scum of the earth.
I could give two shits about Florida people this morning. So my thoughts are on the game. I don't have much for you. The defense, they played well at times. They weren't facing a great offense. They weren't facing an explosive offense. So it was definitely a good matchup for them. And then they played well on the road. You know, they came out and they competed. You like to see that. The competitive spirit was obviously there. And they didn't lay down or quit. The offense, I felt bad for Mason Fine as a true freshman. That was an impossible situation to be put in. That was, in my opinion, that was a bad coaching move by Latrell and Graham Harrell. You know, maybe he grows up from it, but still, I didn't agree with the decision to, you know, put it. If you know your offensive lineman, your offensive line's that bad, it was disappointing to see the way that the offense, you know, played. And to put some perspective kind of on the game, you said that Kentucky was non-good, right? Well, Kentucky is non-good. They gave up in the second quarter, and, you know, they still scored a touchdown, and we didn't. And UMass scored a touchdown, and we didn't score a touchdown.
Well, I will say about those two things that Florida was a little upset about giving away late touchdowns in both those games. And also, they were upset about the quarterback hit, and so they were not going to let up at all. And they did it. They put in some second, third stringers there, but they were not going to let up. They were feisty. I mean, Jim McElwain went for two, you know? After, yeah. It was the hit. Next time Florida got the ball, they drove it down. They eventually scored a touchdown, and then Jim McElwain tried to go for two.
There was some discussion about, you know, is Florida going to show up? Their defense showed up and their offense didn't show up. Florida's offense played uninspired pretty much the entire night. There was a few times where they came out and pushed North Texas around like they should have, but they kind of just went through the motions all night.
Well, let's start. Let's organize our thoughts a bit. Let's begin with the offense because, you know, North Texas is going to tee it high and let it fly or whatever the program slogan is this time. And so let's rate them on their teeing it high and letting it fly. They didn't. 53 yards of total offense. Was it like 19 in the first half or something like that? I totally agree. I'm not the Jim Tressel fan over here where I like, you know, fullback dives into the line and super conservative offense. But I don't know about putting your freshman QB from inside his own 10, you know, standing tall, trusting his offensive line for a play that takes 5 seconds to develop. I don't think that was a good call. There was nothing over the middle, nothing easy. Just give him something that he can see. That's something like a 3-yard pass. Take that. Get his confidence up. Get a completion. Move the ball. Especially in that scenario. Just get out of your own end zone. I appreciate the trust. I appreciate the belief in our team. And I think that's going to go a long way throughout the season. But that was ineffectual throughout the game. I think you got to balance that belief with, you know, reality. Be a little practical out there. Yeah, you want to spread the ball around and chuck it around, but this is a really good defense, and our offensive line cannot pass block. They couldn't against Bethune-Cookman, man. And, you know, you expect them to do it against Florida's defensive line on the road.
You know, at this point in the season, and we talked about it, I think, some in the preseason, we thought that the defense could maybe be better than the offense this year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people didn't necessarily think that because of Latrell and Graham Harrell and what they've done on offense as players in their career and as coaches. But the truth is that the most talent on this team is on the defense. And probably the best coaching and teaching on this team is on the defensive side of the ball. Graham Harrell, he's a young play caller. He's still learning, you know, what he's doing out there. And it was evident last night. The Florida defensive coordinator, he's not a household name, but he just owned Graham Harrell's lunch. Now, granted, he was playing with, you know, he had really good players on his side of the ball, and that was evident. But just a play call. From, you know, play call perspective, what Graham Harrell was trying to do with what he had, it didn't make sense at all. Quit running quarterback design play. If you're facing Florida's defense with the athletes they have and you got a 5'11", 160-pound quarterback with, you know, pads on, stop running design draws with this kid.
Yeah, I didn't really like that too much. I thought it was getting a little too cutesy. But, I mean, I think Graham Harrell had some question marks, and we can raise up some play calling question marks here about him. Everything you said there, I pretty much agree. When we're looking at this offense throughout the season, right? We don't want to overreact like to the first game. We don't want to be like, oh, what? How come they didn't throw for 400 yards? Fire the coach. In the second game, how come they ran for 300 yards? Where's the pass game? Fire the coach. And same thing with this one. We don't want to overreact. We kind of want to see the pattern throughout the season. I think I said in the preview that, in the season preview, that we're going to see ups and downs. They're going to play really good 1 week offensively, and then they're going to regress the next. And, you know, a lot of it depends on the quality of the opposition. We have, we face one of the better talented teams, the best talented team that we'll face all season defensively. Anything else beyond this, if we're seeing 53 yards of offense against Bryce next week, against, you know, any team on our Conference USA slate, then we can maybe break out the torches and say maybe we hired the wrong guy. I don't expect any of that. And, you know, I'm waiting to see on this freshman QB starting, that whole situation. Because I can be convinced if you sat down and said, well, look, here's why this will be successful. You throw them into the fire first, right? You forge them. They come out ready to go. Next week, throughout the season, they see what it takes to compete at the highest level here. And we want to burn that into them young, so that way, you know, they're ready 4 years from now. I could be convinced of that. You can make that argument to me. But as it was pretty deflating, and it was not, I'd say, it didn't engender hope in the fan base. You're seeing that out there. It's really hard to just, you know, you need something for the now. There wasn't a whole lot of now. And, you know, like, for example, they didn't even play Alec Morris at all, not even for a drive in the fourth quarter. And I think that kind of said that they were going for the, let's forge them young and see what's going on, rather than the, you know, let's make the scoreboard look nice. Let's make it look like UMass or Kentucky. By the way, Kentucky is awful still. I you know, they're terrible. New Mexico State was, you know, running up scores on them. But continue.
But, you know, the one thing, I guess, you know, they didn't put Alec Morris in there, like you said, because they wanted to continue to let Fine take his lumps and grow. But he never really looked like he got down on himself last night. I mean, he took a beating that it was just dude just got hammered all night long. He didn't have a chance, right? And you know, he hung in there. You know, he made some nice throws. He made some bad throws. He didn't get rid of the ball sometimes. Whatever you want to say. So if you want to look at a positive about him, he stood in there and he competed all night long. The other, the negative part was he looked like a true freshman out there. You know, the situation, all the stuff, it was too big for him. There was too much going on for him to handle. You know, especially the one interception that he threw. You're like, yeah, you can't really do that in this situation. You can't throw it late over the middle like that. But, you know, you bounce back. You know, the nice throw from the pocket to Thad Thompson, the 15-yarder down the field, and that was a nice play. He threw some nice passes down the field on some fade routes. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see next week against Rice, who doesn't have a good pass defense, how much can he grow?
Yeah, I mean, for one, you know, like I said, I talked about, you see what it's like against a really good defense. That it, you know, it's easy, it makes you sharper. If you're going against, you know, especially for some of the younger receivers, and you're going against, you know, the guys you practice against and whatever, you don't really know how hard to run or how crisp your routes need to be. I mean, coaches tell you, right? But until you've been out there and you realize that move that you made didn't do anything to, you know, an all-conference cornerback, then, you know, then you get the idea. You're like, I got to step my game up a little bit. And that kind of thing will make it, you make it easier for everybody going forward. In particular, that Mason Fine throw over the middle. So he was getting rushed, and he, like, pump faked it, and he pulled it down, and then he was thinking, I guess, oh, well, I don't want to try to run. Let me make that throw. I can make it. And obviously he couldn't make it. Yeah, he's going to learn from that.
There was no way he could have seen where he was throwing the ball.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, he didn't see it. He knew the route that was there, and I think there was a guy running. But, I mean, Florida was waiting for that. I mean, that's the thing. You get pressure on the quarterback, and then you get interceptions. That's, you know, that's the formula that every coordinator dials up. Yeah, you know, Graham Harrell didn't do him any favors. It wasn't until the second half that he thought, you know, let's maybe bring in the fullback or the H-back. The guy's listed as fullback, but it's H-back there. The formation that we ran all over Bethune-Cookman with, he brought him in and they said, let's max protect and see what we can do. Throw it deep. Then we had started having some success. Graham Harrell didn't do him any favors, but, you know, that situation was very, very difficult, like you said. We have a shaky offensive line against a really good defense. We're not even helping them out with any kind of play calls or formations. And then, you know, I thought he looked well. He looked really good in places that you can't read numbers on. If you look at it objectively, look at the stats, nobody did anything. We didn't learn anything. This was awful. You watch the game, you're like, I like the way that after he got hit in the face and thrown on the ground, that he popped up really well. You know, that's the kind of thing you have to take away from this game. It's not fun to do so, but yeah, I think, you know, we only had three catches by a wide receiver. They're all by Thaddeus Thompson, right? That's not good, but whatever. Another thing you said about the defense. Are we ready to talk about the defense? There's not much to talk about when there's only 53 yards of offense. I mean, the run game was kind of meh, but I mean, whatever. They moved the ball a little bit, but then they quickly got snuffed out on third down when they sacked Mason Bryan.
If it was me, you know, I said this in our Slack conversation. If there was third and 10 or longer, I would have just handed the ball off. Just take it and punt. I thought we could have ran the ball more last night. I know it wouldn't have been as successful, but it still would have been better than losing yards to a sack.
Yeah. I mean, I said in my little, all right, how are we going to beat Florida? And it's basically with luck, with execution, and, you know, special teams. And that's the easy way. It's just a, you know, words to say, don't beat yourself. Don't play into their hands and kind of hope for the best. Hope that they don't really want to play because they're better than you. And I thought we executed at about, I don't know, I give us a C on execution offensively. On defense and on special teams, we played okay. You really hope, and we got a turnover. You're really hoping that maybe Nate Brooks takes that back to the house, or that we made a play on special teams, or when there was a, you know, like a turnover. Oh, after that turnover, maybe that's when the offense could score, get a field goal. They try to do whatever. That's what you're hoping for, but, I mean, it went in the cards.
That game was very reminiscent of the 2014 Texas game.
Mm-hmm.
It was exactly like that. The defense played well, played well enough to keep us in the game, and the offense just couldn't do anything.
I would say that Texas game was more disappointing because I expected the offense to be better. That we had the JUCO quarterback step in, and, you know, once he was terrible, we're like, well, how about this guy that's been in the program for a long time? No, didn't happen either. This year, I didn't really expect our offense to do much of anything. I was hoping just for, you know, 150 yards, maybe a touchdown late after the starters are pulled, but, you know, what are you going to do? All right, let's talk about the defense now. The one everybody's proud of, and the one that, when you look at the stat sheet, gave up 471 yards. Like, how could that be? How could you allow 32 points, 471 yards, and still be praised? Well, they were put in terrible positions, field position-wise. They availed themselves well late in drives when they got some three and outs, got some four and outs. Jim McElwain said, we left some points on the field, and they did. They couldn't get in the end zone. We were tough. And as you said, I think Florida's offensive style played into our hands. They did some pro-style kind of looks in that they went too tight, did a lot of play action where they turned around and chuck it deep. Their whole plan of action, plan of attack, is to run, get you, you know, ready to stop the run, and then play action off of that and hit you over the top with a speedy wide receiver. They were missing their best wide receiver, so that helped us. But, you know, I thought we defended well enough. We got beat by some play action plays. But we didn't beat ourselves. We made tackles for the most part. And there was a Fred Scott tackle that he missed on along the sideline that ended up turning into like a 30-yard play or something like that. That's the kind of thing. Everybody needs to make these tackles on the outside. We have some question marks. Some guys that don't make their tackles in space all the time, and that's going to be a problem as we face teams that like to spread it out and make you make those tackles. But all in all, people made tackles. We got backfield penetration. You know, and even when they were able to complete passes, we were able to get a hit on the quarterback, including that Joshua Wheeler unintentional low blow. Does that about sum it up, you think? Was there anything else that you saw there?
You know, one thing that I mentioned on our Slack conversation before the game was that I was concerned about our linebackers covering their running backs or covering their guys in the flats, and that our linebackers were lost. there. Every time Florida was going to throw the ball, you could tell because the quarterback would come up to the line of scrimmage and he'd point out the number of the linebacker that he was going to throw at that matchup. Like, I read his lips the one time. He said 22, and I was like, oh, that's a giant. They're going to throw the ball. And sure enough, they threw it right at him. So, you know, I mean, I thought our defensive backs played well. We didn't see much of Chad Davis later in the game. Jenkins came in, and I thought that he played well. I think he has a little bit more speed than Chad Davis, so that's kind of why he was out there. Hood and Roderick Young, the defensive, the nose tackles, I thought they played well. Tillman Johnson, the defensive end, I didn't think he played well. Mm-mm. I think when Florida was running their zone running scheme that had given us tremendous fits the past 2 years because we would just get utterly obliterated on those plays. We did better last night, but when Johnson was in the game, they ran right at him.
Yeah.
And, there was a couple times where Florida, you could tell, they just, shoved us around. But then there was other times when our guys, the run fits were good, the tackles were good, and, we made good plays. But again, Florida's not a good offense. Do they?
Yeah, I think it was Tillman Johnson that said, so they were running that zone play, and if you're unfamiliar, it's basically, block the guy in front of you, or there are rules to that, but, you kind of block the guy over there. So it's not really man-on-man blocking. It's, kind of combination blocks. So they were moving us to the right. And, Tillman Johnson, he tried to spin inside. And so it had the effect of blocking our guy as we're all flowing to our left. He does a spin, to his right and runs into his own man and creates a seal for Florida's offensive line, which is exactly what they're going for. And I don't know if he was trying to, open up a lane so that we could, scrape. A linebacker could scrape into the hole, because that's the thing. Sometimes you see it's a zone play. What the lineman will do is say, I'm just going to stunt right, and we'll scrape over the top, which means the linebacker will just immediately fly into that hole. It didn't look like that, because I don't think there were any linebackers ready to scrape into there, and Florida just burst it up. I think that was a touchdown, or the one right before. So some question marks there. I think it was Tillman Johnson. I saw that. I didn't rewind it and watch it because by then, what was the point? I agree with everything you said there. Cornerbacks, defensive backs made plays. I mean, look, if you give up a play, that's fine. This is the nature of the game, especially college football today when we're having 60 to 50 scores. It's like basketball scores out here. So, giving up some points is not terrible. They did a great job not getting beat up, which I liked. Because against Iowa, who had, I want to say a similar offense, but a similar offensive philosophy last season, they were blowing us off the ball and running right up the middle. Louisiana Tech blew us off the ball, ran right up the middle. So if what we saw yesterday versus Florida is applicable throughout the season, then I'm encouraged. If DeMonte Hood, Roderick Young, are getting penetration and stopping that stuff, then that means we have a chance. And then, we basically play in the same game we've been playing for, 3 years now? Hey, the defense is giving us a chance. Let's see if the offense can move the ball and take advantage. It's not my favorite game, but, it's where we are right now. So I'm hopeful. That's why I'm hopeful. We lost to a good team, but we didn't lose the way that we were losing last year. And that's encouraging. Greg's not interested. He's like, all right, so quick previews of the remix. Rice didn't look very good. They don't really look that good. They're definitely not the team that came into here, came in Apogee last season with Dreyfus Jackson, and they ran on us. Last year, I think was it Andrew McNulty was able to put up his best game of his career passing wise through there was an 88 yarder to fan favorite Carlos Harris. Can I call him that? Or am I the only fan? I think me and his dad.
Boom.
So, yeah, I feel good about going into that matchup. Rice is not very good at all. They give up a lot of yards, a lot of pass yards, a lot of rush yards. So they're averaging, was it 4.8 yards allowed on the ground? I'm looking at their pass yards here.
Their quarterback, Sterling, he's not very good. They can still run the ball on us. Their defense is... Their secondary is not good. Seth Russell, he just looked off in the game anyways. They were missing opportunities left and right there. So it's probably our best chance at a win if you look at the remaining schedule is this Rice game.
Well, I'll say this. If you are wondering, like, I mean, they've looked bad, but they've looked bad against probably the conference's best team in Western Kentucky, a very good Army team. Look, you know, I was looking at this. Army's probably going to go 3-0 in Conference USA, and they're not in Conference USA. They beat Rice last night. They destroyed UTEP, and then they play us later in the year. 3-0 for the first time since '96, and then you know Rice got beat up by Baylor. So, you know, that's a tough schedule. I don't think we would get a win or look very very good against those three teams. So. We might be just kind of putting a cart before the horse, so to speak.
Look, their secondary, again, is not good. And yeah. We should be able to throw the ball against those guys. I think it's our best chance at a win for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think you said that just already. Yeah, so that's next week. That's in Houston. Are you going to make it down there? I'm going to make it over to Houston. So if you are in the area... and you want some hot sports opinions, and to hand me a beer, let me know.
I try to stay out of Houston.
All right, so that's next week. Rice doesn't look good. We'll obviously break that down, talk about it, overanalyze it. I mean, I don't really know if there's any more to take out of this game. I really like to see more, practical play calling from Seth Luttrell and Graham Harrell. I did like that Graham Harrell, they showed his little halftime speech. I did like that. I thought that was a good quality halftime encouragement speak. Hey, expect to score. You know, he said kind of some of these other things there. But in the game, it's really about managing, you know, your players' emotions and, you know, like attitude than it is X's and O's. I mean, you're not going to teach anybody a new blocking technique in the, you know, 15 minutes you have a halftime. Like, let me see, get your arm, you know, you're not going to do any of that. You can change some scheme things up, react to the game, but nothing new is going to happen. It's not basketball. You can drop a play right there. So, you know, what can you do? You can encourage him. And I don't think it was unrealistic. I mean, you know, him saying, hey, we're going to go up and down the field. But him saying, believe that we're going to score, believe that we can do this. I think that was important. So that way they didn't, you know, get super down on themselves. And the first drive, they came out and they moved the ball a little bit. So it was encouraging, and I feel like it had the intended effect. Did you hear that, and what did you think of that?
I didn't make anything of it. Coaches speak. That's whatever.
Pretty standard coach speak.
I mean, hey, you know, if you're a guy and you need to have that, you know, pep talk at halftime and to remain positive, then, you know, hey, it was good for you. If not, you know, whatever.
What kind of halftime speech do you get? Are you a fiery? You're Jim McElwain. You're going to yell at somebody, get red-faced at him?
In the past, I would have. But in that game, I mean, you just kind of walk in there in the locker room and you're just like, hey, you know, it is what it is. We'll just go out there and play the second half. I mean, what more are you going to say? They're just dominating you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, like, you don't want everybody to quit, you know, or, you know, you don't want them to mentally lose the game. You know what I mean? You still want them to compete. So, and I think, you know, for a basketball team, it's easy to kind of look all the guys in the eye. You kind of know everybody. But, you know, football team, they're just so, it's so huge that you kind of have to give that speech because, you don't know, one of the two guys there might need it. But, you know, I don't really care so much about that. Let's talk a little bit about the play, you know, of the night.
He was talking about, like, how they were a little anxious at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think Graham Harrell himself was anxious at the beginning.
Guys, I believe in myself. I will call the good plays. We'll go up and down score.
Yeah, if you're one of those that likes, you know, the I'm just not a big, you know, speech guy, I guess. And that's
I think a well-timed, well-given, well-performed speech is good, and it has its place. It can be rousing. I don't like terrible speeches full of cliches. I was at a groundbreaking ceremony, and there was terrible speeches going on, and I could not get into it. I had to walk away because it was awful. So I'm talking about speeches in any context, yeah. Including there.
Too many fans get caught up in what a coach says. Like the UTSA fans, they were all like giddy about Frank Wilson saying, you know, no moral victories. Dude, who gives a shit? Who really cares what, you know, the coaches are not there to say something to inspire you at their press conference. They're to give you as little information as possible.
Yeah, I'll disagree with you there. And I don't want to get too much into this, 'cause I do want to talk about this Josh Wheeler thing. But I'll say that, I mean, you have a position that needs to communicate with a lot of different groups. And a lot of it is rah-rah, but it can backfire. Look at Dan McCarney. He said the right things, said really great things. And, you know, it got to a certain point where you realize that's all he had, you know? You're like, well, where were these speeches when you were in the living rooms of these kids that you need to get to North Texas? You know what I mean? Because, you know, inspiring 30 to 50-year-old dudes ain't going to work anymore. We need 17 to 22-year-old guys convinced to come to North Texas.
Well, what had happened was he was never in those living rooms.
Well, yeah. So, Josh Wheeler, it looked to me, multiple viewings, because it was the only thing interesting in the game to ESPN announcers. You know, another side point here. It seems like everybody is from Denton or the Denton area and is familiar with Denton. Where are these people? Where are they? You know, Dusty Dvorak there is like, oh yeah, I grew up a little bit in North Texas, a little bit. I went to school there, whatever. Anyway, Josh Wheeler came off the edge. It looked to me like he stumbled when he was also trying to dive to hit the quarterback. And he's stumbling, reaching out because he's a quarterback getting ready to throw. And he hit him on the thigh, kind of lower area, right when Jake Del Rio
was Luke.
Well, fucking, they're all the same, man. It's fucking Del Rio. Anyway, so he was throwing the ball, and he was on his plant leg. He hit him on the knee. This is a classic quarterback dangerous play, and I think it was a football play, right? Obviously, you don't want that to happen. They gave him a penalty to kind of discourage that, but it's not like Josh Wheeler came around the edge and was like, you know what? Let me destroy this quarterback's knee because of all the hate that I have built up for him, or, you know, whatever. That's not what happens here. I don't think that's the case. It's a football play. A very unfortunate football play. And I think that's the end of it.
Yeah, it was unintentional, but still had a factor of dirtiness to it. You don't go low on a quarterback. You just don't do it in today's game. And he knew he couldn't get to the quarterback to hit him up high, so he knew that he was going to go low. He already had the low center of gravity. He dove at, you know, Del Rio's legs because that was the only area he could get to. So, you don't question the effort or the really intention to hurt Del Rio, but the intention was to go low because that was his only option on the play.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's a hard thing to get out of the game. It was like also when D. Balkman got a penalty for continuing to play when his helmet came off. Is that, I mean, you're coached throughout every practice you've been in at every level to compete, to never stop, to compete to the end of the whistle. And it's really hard to just immediately stop and not do anything when the play is continuing. And in this case, it's really hard to adjust yourself in that half second when you're coming off the edge and you're trying to judge, you know, the distance and your ability to hit the quarterback when everything in you is telling you to hit the quarterback no matter what. I mean, you know, the very, very best guys can do this and they play in the NFL probably. And, you know, when you're JUCO college kid that plays in North Texas, maybe you're not so great at making judging that whole distance there. Again, that's what I'm saying. It's a football play. That it's when you slow it down, it makes everything look intentional. I think they just did research on this. That, you know, you show anything happening in slow motion, it looks like it was intentional. Even if you know rationally that it couldn't be, there was not enough time to react, whatever. It looks a lot more intentional than it was. If you watch normal speed, there was very little time to make any, you know, adjustments there. And I also think that he was kind of falling down. I don't know. I think he's going to feel bad about this whole thing. They're going to be like, yeah, we're not dirty around here. We don't make that hit. Somebody's going to make a speech about it. And then we're going to move on. It sucks for Luke, Jake, John, whatever his name is, Del Rio. Yeah.
It sucks for them because up until that point, you really had no ill will towards Florida and their fan base and their players. And they, with Del Rio at quarterback, they had a really good chance to win the SEC East. If they don't have Del Rio at quarterback, I don't think they're going to win the SEC East because their defense is, like we mentioned, probably the best defense in the country, and it's good enough to shut down any offense they face.
And I think Alabama's defensive line is probably better. Like they're monsters, but what it's not an SEC football podcast. There's 8,000 of those.
Right. But I mean, as a collective group, though, you're not going to find a better unit in the country than that. So, I mean, it sucks for a good player like Del Rio to get hurt in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. It sucks, but I don't. You know, again, I don't think it's intentional. Jim McElwain says, "Well, you know, they got some personal fouls." And, you know, there were some low hits in some of the other games. Again, I mean, we see that a lot. It's football play. It's not, like, endemic to this program. I don't think. Well, maybe it will be. Maybe as we go throughout the season, we'll injure more people and we'll be really, really awful and that'll be, like, our MO. I don't know. Maybe that's the case. We have injured two quarterbacks Matt Davis is out for the season. And that was us. And maybe Del Rio.
You know, maybe Seth Luttrell teaches his guys, like Bobby Bowden did, to play to the echo of the whistle.
I like that. All right. So let's take a quick look around Conference USA. The worst conference in the world this season. What?
Real quick, before we do that.
What's up?
There was one guy on defense that you mentioned a little bit there was Bachman. Yeah. I thought that he played a good game. It was the first time that he's really kind of stood out and made some plays. So got to give a shout out to him. I thought he played well.
Yeah. There were aside from Tillman Johnson or one or two guys that got burned a couple plays. I think everybody on the defense played good, played well. I mean, even Fred Scott, he got burned a couple times, but he made some nice tackles here and there. It was fine. It was good. I was encouraged by the defensive performance. Ugh, I can't even speak this morning. All right, let's start from the top.
Can you ever speak?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They say my voice is annoying. I hear that. It says SMU. Okay, here's the game of the week, pretty much, that everybody's going to say, well, look at that. You saw the way that they played this team? Oh, that was amazing. UTSA led Arizona State. I want to say, what was it, 21-12 or 28-12 or 2015, something like that. But like many on Twitter, I think I saw it was a Barking Carnival or somebody said, it feels like Arizona State is going to just hit a big couple plays and, you know, win this game. And turns out they did. They did exactly that. It is my contention that Arizona State was feeling themselves after scoring 68 points against Texas Tech the week previous. And kind of expected a walkover in San Antonio. And, you know, despite playing horribly, gifting two muff punts to UTSA, they won. And, you know, I think when they finally realized that, you know, they were going to have to play football, they rattled off 20 straight points and shut down UTSA six straight times. Dalton Sturm looked good for UTSA because he was able to escape, but, I mean, Arizona State is not the greatest defense. themselves. But there you go. They won. Arizona State won 32-28. UTSA fans feel like they won the conference already just based on that one. Like I said, I was unimpressed by the whole thing. I get it. It was kind of an upset bid. You know, it looks good. You can tell it. Look how well we compete. But it's still a loss. What do you think about that game?
I think UTSA played well. They showed some stuff. You know, they came out ready to play. You got to give Frank Wilson a ton of credit. You got to give the UTSA fans credit for showing up on a Friday night. And, you know, they certainly had a large crowd there. And
29,000, I think the announced crowd was.
Yeah, they had their shot for an upset. You know, yeah, Arizona State, they came in lackluster. They overlooked them. But UTSA, you know, even though they were gifted some things, they took advantage of those gifts. Their offensive line for UTSA, not the greatest. They don't have a lot of depth. I thought that their defensive game plan is exactly the type of game plan they're going to have against us, which could cause some issues for us. Their defense is kind of built to handle spreads. Dalton Sturm, he's played like one of the best quarterbacks in Conference USA so far. Yeah, he's made some mistakes. He hasn't necessarily played a lot of great teams. He hasn't had a lot of help around him, but he's definitely a quarterback to watch going forward. He's a guy with like his unscheduled plays like a Matt Davis that could give us trouble.
Yeah, the UTSA takes on Old Dominion next week. Old Dominion hasn't really shown too many things. And, you know, we'll see what happens there when UTSA isn't as hyped for this game. I think that's also something to take into account, like that ready-to-play factor. You know, it's easy to get hyped up for a big Power 5 team coming to your house on a Friday night. It's less easy to get hyped up to travel to Old Dominion to play in front of 14,000 people or whatever.
They may suffer from some hangover themselves. Yeah. They may think that, hey, we hung with the Power 5 team, so we should roll over Old Dominion. And yeah. Old Dominion's got some offensive players.
Yeah. The other thing that you mentioned, like Arizona State, like basically just have more talent than UTSA. I think you mentioned this in the Slack. Basically, Arizona State had streaks going wide open all day. And Mean Green Nation contributor Aldo says, yeah, you saw some technique things wrong with UTSA's defensive backs. I think it was just a matter of speed. Once they realize, like, we can just outrun them, we don't need to get clever, we can just throw it deep. And that's how Arizona State got back into the game. They were just chucking it deep. And their quarterback was awful. They were really beating themselves. But enough about that game. One more. Not enough about that game. We mentioned that they were kind of going pro style, UTSA. They went to more spread stuff. I mean, they mixed in some of their base pro style stuff, but they went to more spread stuff, and I think that is a concern for us a little bit. If it was pro style, that's basically what Florida was doing, and I'd be still excited and licking my chops because our defense looked really good against that. If they're spread it out a little bit more, we'll see. We'll see about that. Rice lost 38-10 to Baylor. Baylor didn't look that great in this game, but, you know, they handled Rice pretty easily. As you said, Rice didn't look that great. I think the moment of the day was Rice MOB mob band making fun of the Baylor accusation. The whole thing, they're making fun of it. And they even released a statement, like, we realize some people could have been offended. Whatever. Rice is funny. Their band is funny. Rice is not good. We play them next week. Wonder what they're going to do when we're there.
Who knows?
Middle Tennessee beat Bowling Green 41-21. Middle Tennessee looked good mostly in that game. Stock still had 278 yards passing and three touchdowns. They ran the ball well. They pretty much handled Bowling Green throughout the game.
They were down in that game at one point early on. I watched a little bit of it. The weather, it was raining, pouring, so wasn't ideal conditions to play in.
Yeah, it looks like they went down 21-14. They were kind of trading touchdowns, but it was nothing amazing. It was kind of a weird game because the rain. Akron went to Marshall, scored 65 points, and I think this is the most points scored in regulation against Marshall. The previous high was 59 when Western Kentucky had that epic game in 2014. I watched a little bit of this game. I was not impressed by Marshall coming into the season, and this doesn't make me any more impressed. It doesn't change my opinion. 65-38 was the final score. Akron just pretty much did whatever they wanted against their defense.
Yeah. That game was crazy because Marshall was down 7-0. Then they jumped out to 21-7 lead, and then Akron reeled off 34 points in the second quarter.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Some of that was like defensively too. They sacked Chase Litton, got a fumble return. You know, they just kept scoring on them. And even late, like Marshall just couldn't get back into it. They couldn't play any defense, is what it was.
Yeah, Terry Bowden, old coach from Auburn. There you go. Sideline, boy, he looked old. Still had a lot of pep in his halftime talk, though.
Kansas State destroyed Florida Atlantic, and they were up 42-0 at halftime. Florida Atlantic was supposed to be a surprise team, sleeper team. Everybody's like, look out for Florida Atlantic. They're pretty good. Look at that defense. They look terrible. That was awful. I watched like half second of that game. I was like, they're not going to be in this game. UMass, that old powerhouse, they beat up on Florida International. I think FIU had a chance to tie. They were driving late, and they actually got the first down on 4th-and-1. They crossed over and the guy fumbled. UMass picked it up, won the game. It was 21-13. It was not a good game. Not a whole lot of offense from either team. Was it UMass had 394 yards and FIU had 313? These are not good teams, and Florida International looked bad. Western Kentucky, 31-24 against Miami, Ohio. I think Miami, Ohio scored late to kind of make it look a little bit better. It was like 31-17. But not the greatest showing. You kind of expect Western Kentucky to do a little bit more here just by reputation. But yeah.
I think in that game, though, their starting quarterback was out. I think White was banged up from the Alabama game.
He played, but he didn't play that well. He was 19 of 31, 268 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick.
I think one of the things to point out there is, you know, playing Alabama and then you roll over and you're playing a lesser opponent, but they probably took quite a beating from Alabama.
Yeah.
Maybe they had some other guys injured or you know, maybe they suffered from the syndrome. Like, you know, maybe we will.
Yeah, I know, right? We're going to go to Rice and like, ooh. But then again, Rice played Baylor. I don't know. Baylor still has some talent. Maybe it evens out. Well, they had a day's rest extra. In any case, Western Kentucky was one of two teams to win. Basically, the two better teams in the conference won. And, you know, everybody else lost. Old Dominion got destroyed by NC State 49-22. Eastern Michigan beat up on Charlotte 37-19. I think this game was the weird game where Charlotte had a couple of roughing penalties. And so Eastern Michigan kicked off from like the Charlotte 30. So they tried like an onside kick. It was ridiculous. It happened like twice in the game. Stupid. And then here's a big game. Troy gave Clemson, they gave him the business. Nearly pulled off an upset. Only lost by, was it a score last week? They beat Southern Miss 37-31. I forget how did this game end. I forget how it ended, but I saw a couple highlights. I think this was on BN Sport. Ito Smith had like a 70-yard run to start the second half for Southern Miss. They kind of traded scores, but Nick Mullins, 6 picks already this season. What do you make of that?
You know, he's probably top down at his level. He lost quite a bit of his weapons from last year, so he's probably just pressing. You always see that, you know, when a quarterback has a great junior year and they come into their senior year and they think that they have to be better than they were last year, and then they kind of start to press too much. I think that's probably what you're seeing from Nick Mullins.
Yeah, I can buy that argument. Texas Tech 59, Louisiana Tech 45. I think you have to put this through the Texas Tech score translator and realize that this was like more like a, you know, 21-34 game. And if it's like a normal score. Texas Tech can score like ridiculous. 60 points again. But they cannot play defense worth a damn. And Louisiana Tech, I think Skip Holtz was like, well, their defense is pretty good. I mean, you know, we couldn't move the ball against some of the coverages. Whatever, you score 45 points, you know. I think Louisiana Tech's probably going to suffer from a hangover next week against Middle Tennessee. You know, thinking they can move the ball the way they did the previous week, but it was Texas Tech.
I don't think they're going to suffer from any hangover. I think that's going to be a good game.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know how good Middle Tennessee is. But yeah, Ryan Higgins threw for 311 yards and three touchdowns. Was it Mahomes had 470 yards passing and five touchdowns, 37 yards on the ground for and a score. I think he leads the nation in yards, like combined yards. I think he's ahead of Lamar Jackson, but I mean, he's obviously not as good.
If Tech had a defense, he'd be in the conversation for Heisman. Tech continues to win, maybe they only lose like two games during the year or something. He should go to New York.
I think the only thing holding them back is probably the Big 12 schedule. That Oklahoma just lost, Texas just lost, Baylor's down, so he's not going to have those marquee big games against teams that, you know, that matter anymore, I guess.
Yeah, but they're still going to be televised and early, and he could still put up a ton of yards and points, and those are all winnable games because all those other teams aren't that good.
So I think this is the biggest shocker of a score. Army 66, UTEP 14. Army hadn't scored 60. They hadn't scored this many since like the 40s, back when they were, you know, amazing. I'm looking it up. Yeah, 66 points were the most since they scored 69 against Pittsburgh in 44 and 68 against Colgate in 58. So there you go. Army's back, ladies and gentlemen, at least when it comes to Conference USA.
How many yards did they run for in that?
I think it was like 417. Let me look at it right now. Rushing, net yards rushing, 419.
Did they have any throwing yards?
They did. They passed for 174 yards. They put up 593. And guess what? They ran like 80 plays. Like that's the thing. Everybody says that triple option is boring, or the wishbone. But it's a spread. It's spread basically. They spread you out horizontally. They make you defend everywhere.
They don't wishbone, Jesus, son.
77 plays. That's what it was. 7.7 yards per play. 6.1 yards per rush. I think Aaron Jones got another touchdown, but he was not a factor. Sean Coogler was like, "Oh yeah, it was on me." Yeah, 66-14. UTEP was supposed to be, you know, kind of that second tier, maybe they're kind of good squad to take on Southern Miss next week.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, you know, Conference USA West, all the teams, did we all lose?
I think we did. The only teams that won were Middle Tennessee and Western Kentucky.
Yeah, so the whole Conference USA West division is kind of wide open. I'm not saying North Texas is, you know, has a chance really to compete in the West, but you don't really... You know, they're Southern Miss. They've kind of struggled at times this year, so you're not quite sure if they're, you know, the lead dogs. And Louisiana Tech's probably looked the best in Conference USA West. So it'll be interesting to see what they do against Middle Tennessee next week. And, you know, if you were trying to pick the third best team in the West, I'd probably lean towards UTSA.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that we have a pretty solid chance of finishing third in the West. Like, if I don't think we're good enough to beat Louisiana Tech or Southern Miss. But, you know, we can beat Rice, and we play them next week. We can beat UTEP. That's a possibility. It'll be tough, but it's a possibility. And we can play UTSA. We can play with them. We can beat them. You know, I'm not really – they look good right now, but we'll play them later in the season. So we could conceivably – you know, be the third best team in this division. This is obviously barring the cross division matchups, but and I think that's that we covered all of them. That's all the conference this week. So a bad week for Conference USA. Not a whole lot of wins and a lot of embarrassing losses. Next week, UTSA Old Dominion, UNT Rice, Charlotte Temple, Vanderbilt Western Kentucky. I think that one's going to be on CBS Sports Network if you're interested in watching that. Ball State and Florida Atlantic, UCF, Florida International, Louisiana Tech, Middle Tennessee. That's a game that I'm kind of going to peek at. Southern Miss takes on UTEP. It's another game that I'll peek at. And then a really interesting game in Marshall? Louisville takes on Marshall. Number 10 Louisville. They're 10 right now. We'll see. They're going to skyrocket. And Lamar Jackson gets a chance to do some things against a defense that gave up 68 points to Akron. Oh my! Louisville's averaging 65 points a game.
Yeah, they'll probably be one of the top three teams in the country when the poll comes out today.
I mean, I don't see any reason why not. That was real fun watching them tear up Florida State. A very good Florida State defense there. Although Florida State, it doesn't seem like they know that the game start at the times that they start because, you know, they come out really slowly.
But like one of the most surprising scores from yesterday was Michigan State just destroying Notre Dame, pretty much. And that was, you know, Michigan State, obvious that, you know, D'Antonio, he loves to be in like that underdog role, and everybody kind of thought Notre Dame was going to roll them, and they should have. And here you see the score is like 35-12 or something in the fourth quarter, and you're like, excuse me? And then you see like the thing comes out that Brian Kelly was looking at his defensive coordinator on the sideline and said, "What the F are you doing?" Woo!
Brian Kelly's always mad, and it's never his fault. Just top 25 scores. I thought with Wisconsin only 23-17 over Georgia State. Sorry, was interesting, but I mean. Clemson.
Needed a late touchdown to win that game because they were losing 17-13.
Appalachian State hosted Miami and got pasted at home. I mean, I think that's fine. I think getting beat at home is still better than going on the road and just doing that. Occasionally, bring somebody in there. You know, bump up ticket sales. Who's gonna think of the local vendors, man?
Yeah, but still, that game there. You want to show well at home. That was important for App State to, even if they didn't win, you can't get blown out at home.
Yeah, I agree. But I still think it's a good thing that they need more of that. We need more of that. I'd like to get some of that, some of these squads coming in here.
We need more blowouts at home against Power 5 teams. I get you. All right.
No, we need, like, I've been saying this. We need, like, the Washington States. They're always good for a loss. Washington State, Indiana, you know, like that tier there. Vanderbilt, bring them in here, you know? Those kinds of schools in there.
We need teams that can't play offense, to come in.
Let's do that. We need, like, patsies. Line them up. North Dakota State, in an upset that wasn't an upset. I mean, everybody was like, yeah, North Dakota State, they beat a team. They beat Iowa. I totally see how that could happen. 23-21 over Iowa.
Yeah, they'll probably be ranked this week because voters, I think, in the AP poll are allowed to vote for FCS North Dakota ones. State. Yeah, so they might be even ranked 25th or something. Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Michigan nearly was upset, and then they kind of came to play, and they blew it up in late.
I wouldn't say they came to play. Colorado's quarterback got hurt. That's where the game changed. Michigan had, you know, they traded the lead back and forth there. And then the quarterback for Colorado, he got hurt on one play. You could tell he was visibly in pain, limping. He takes the next snap, throws it for a 73-yard touchdown, and then that was it. He was done for in the game.
Yeah, and that put him up 28-24. And after that, Michigan scored three straight touchdowns, including Jabril Peppers' 54-yard return. He played a hell of a game. He was making like tackles for loss and then doing kick returns. I wonder what he could do that would convince you, the listener, to vote for him for Heisman. Like, obviously, right now, he's second to Lamar Jackson and maybe even Christian McCaffrey. But what could he do? What kind of game could he have where you're like, you know what? I'd vote for him, you know? What kind of series of games, I mean? I don't know. I was thinking about it. He would basically have to return a kick every game and, like, get 10 tackles a game, maybe an interception return or three.
I mean, he's played on their offense before. He would have to start playing
more offense
all the time and defense all the time.
Yeah.
Or Lamar would have to get hurt.
I guess relevant to Texas, the state. Cal beat Texas 50-43 late. I didn't watch this game, but apparently there was some controversy.
Yeah, I stayed up to watch it. So, you know, the Texas Charlie Strong, he was quite the dumbass in that game. You know, when you're down by 7 and your defense is giving up 50 points and there's 3 minutes left to go in the game, I don't think you punt the ball in that situation. Anyways, he punts the ball. Cal gets it, 3rd and 1. The Cal player busted up the middle to win the game. On the 3rd and 1 play, he's going to score a touchdown, drops the ball at the 1 yard line. It rolls into the end zone. The Texas player is pretty clear in the replay. He picks it up, but the referee or the replay official ruled that there was no immediate recovery. I'm not sure what immediate recovery is. It was pretty clear that the dude picked it up. Now, granted, Texas probably wouldn't have won the game anyways, but yeah. That was pretty shady.
That's interesting. Good old refereeing.
And I had Cal fans because I was talking about the game late at night, you know, 2 o'clock on Twitter. You know, Cal fans are saying, you know, well, the NCAA owes us a Rose Bowl. You know, from 2004 when Texas and Mack Brown got it. Yeah, you know, you got curb stomped by Texas Tech that year, and you would have got curb stomped by Michigan.
You know, it's funny that I think so. Then you had people from both coasts, like literally, yelling at you. Let me see. Alabama came back. They were down 21 points to Mississippi. Came back, won that game. Alabama looks good. They look really good. This was the trap game. This is the game to lose. And they didn't. You know, they reminded me of Michigan in that way. In that. Maybe another team loses, like a la Florida State, but not them, you know. This was, I think, against better competition than Colorado. But I don't know, Colorado looks pretty good. I kind of like what they had to offer in that game and their past two games. They beat up on Colorado State, Idaho State, you know, FCS. We'll see against Oregon next week. Oregon is not going to be ranked after losing to Nebraska. I think that's all I care to browse. I guess, well, the big game, Ohio State and Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma has a good portion of North Texas alumni who are now fans of Oklahoma, including a famous one or two. And, they're disappointed today. And that makes me happy. Ohio State won 45-24.
I mean, you can't really call out Ohio State's defense and call them basic.
Here's the other thing. You don't really need to get cutesy. I mean, look at this example right here, right? Ohio State, maybe they say base defense. They D'd them up, right? They got an interception, pick six. They play well. And then you look at Skip Holtz calling Texas Tech's defense, clever. They move around a lot of coverages. They do this and that. And they allowed 45 points. Usually, you got to get cutesy when you can't play straight up, you know? Some of the best defenses are just base.
You know, here's the interesting thing last night. Yeah, you know, our country, we care so much about football, and there's these big games were going on last night, and then you had, like, the two bombs that go off in New York City,
yeah,
and nobody was really talking about it except for, like, Fox News.
Yeah, they're like, bomb. There's a game going on, ladies and gentlemen. We gotta focus on the important things.
Here we are, you know, we're like a week later, you know, past from 15 years of 9/11. This stuff goes on in New York, and, you know, hey, whatever.
Yeah, you maybe open up in another tab, but then you're watching the game. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Mean Green Nation podcast. Please send your unclever hate for North Texas our way at Mean Green Nation. You can tweet at Greg, MGN underscore breakdown. I got to say, man, the drunk Florida fans, meh, they were not really clever with their yeah. taunts. I heard better in Knoxville. And I said this. I was there in Knoxville. I listened. I was like, wow. And that's why I think that they're going to win the game they play next week, based on heckles. Next week, we take on Rice. I will try to be at the game. You guys, I think most people that are interested in hanging out have already reached out. So we'll hang out.
Wait, people actually want to hang out with you?
That's weird, man. I don't know. Did you know I'm married too? That's crazy. People, that's crazy. So, yeah. Next week, Rice. Conference play is when it really matters, when it really, you know, comes down to it. All this other stuff. You know, we're not gonna compete for the college football playoff. So if we lose to Florida, it doesn't matter. It's when it starts. I'm excited. I'm excited about conference play. Anything else you want to add as you get text messages? No.
No, I got nothing else to add. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how much Mason Fine grows up against a weak Rice team next week. And you know, as bad as some of the stuff has happened in this season already, and you know, as down as some people are and as grumpy as I am, if we go into Rice and we beat Rice, we're 2-2.
Yeah, that's yes. pretty been amazing.
And it doesn't matter who you've played or really what you've done, you're 2-2. You know, like UTSA, they could say that they, you know, hey, we almost beat Arizona State, but you know what, you're 1-2. And you know what, North Texas, we're 1-2 as well. So at the end of the day, it's all the same.
Yeah, I'm still very bullish on our season prospects. I think if we get the right strand of luck, if Graham Harrell maybe figures out some of his play calls, and Mason Fine grows up real fast, I still think we can have an outside chance of like a bowl number 6. It's possible, and it's not like it's like really impressive, because Conference USA is not very good. So, but that's what I'm saying. That's good. That's a good thing about this.
You know, your eyes look a little red this morning, and I just want to tell you to stay off the weed.
The weed. You know, like, dude, you just look at that, those scores there. Nobody looks good. Nobody looks amazing.
And you know what? We don't look good either.
So. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, if it's just a toss-up, man, I'll take it. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks, Mr. Greg Godecker. Greg John Doe. For joining the podcast again today. If you want to get in contact with the show or us, you can. podcast@meangreennation.com. You can. If you don't want to join the Slack, I think we probably have our limit of Slack people, and that's fine. You know, there's always the comment section, which is basically a message board, but I like its comment section. It keeps out a lot of spam, and that makes me happy. So we're done. Thanks for listening. Go Mean Green.